Good evening, and thank you for joining E*TRADE's third quarter 2017 earnings conference call. Joining the call today are Chief Executive Officer Carl Rossner and Chief Financial Officer Michael Pizzi. Today's call may include forward-looking statements, including statements about E*TRADE's proposed transaction with TCA and its benefits and timing, as well as the company's future operational and financial performance, which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, the company will also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For a reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP figures, and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future results of E*TRADE Financial, please refer to the company's earnings release furnished on Form 8K along with Forms 10Ks and 10Qs and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are also available at about.etrade.com. Note that the company has not reconciled its forward-looking non-GAAP measures, including non-GAAP adjusted operating margin, to the most directly comparable GAAP measures because material items that impact the measure are out of company's control and cannot be reasonably predicted. This call will present information as of October 19th, 2017. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. The call is being recorded and replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. With that, I will now turn the call over to Mr. Rossner. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good evening, and thank you for joining. It's a pleasure to speak with you again, now with a little more than a year under my belt as E*TRADE CEO, and especially in the wake of strong results and solid progress across our key initiatives and growth goals. This past quarter, we were busy, to say the least, so I'll start with the hit parade and then revisit each element in more detail. In early August, we completed the integration of Options House, bringing all of our customers into the E*TRADE ecosystem and capturing all expected revenue and expense synergies. With this work behind us, we have now pivoted our efforts toward the most exciting component of this initiative, unleashing the full power of the industry's top derivatives platform. On the marketing front, we enjoyed an overwhelmingly positive response to our new brand campaign, driving strong customer growth and increased engagement. We are on to the second phase of our new campaign in which we evolve our messaging to further highlight E*TRADE's value proposition, along with new, powerful, and irreverent creative. We continue to improve the customer experience through several enhancements across our services and platforms. We marched forward on our capital deployment initiatives, buying back $187 million worth of stock and onboarding customer deposits to grow our balance sheet to slightly north of $60 billion in total assets. We capitalized on the continued improvement to our credit profile and a recent ratings upgrade to refinance our corporate debt, landing a three-handle on our average coupon for savings of $17 million in annual interest expense. We enjoyed strong customer activity in continuation of the summer's trend, and we're now tracking toward our best year in E*TRADE's history for DARTs and customer margin balances. We made solid progress against our growth objectives with 32% derivatives mix in line with last quarter's record, $4.9 billion in managed assets, year-to-date account growth in our targeted range, and year-to-date asset growth up considerably from last year. We gained significant ground in our push to win new corporate services clients, closing meaningful new business for approximately $8 billion in stock plan assets to come onto our platform in the coming quarters. And we generated solid revenue growth against sequential and year-ago periods in spite of the shifts to the commissions landscape, demonstrating the strength and effectiveness of the E*TRADE model in market environments like today's. In a nutshell, we're very pleased with our progress and today's results. Results that allow us to focus not just on organic initiatives, but also on those strategic ones that further generate value for our shareholders. As you may know, E*TRADE strives to be the number one digital broker and advisor to self-directed traders and investors. Yet with only 10 to 12% share of our customers' investable wealth, we fully recognize that key segments of our customers look elsewhere for hands-on management. Accordingly, we have been searching for the optimal way to approach this population through a superior technology and custody platform in service of independent RIAs. And within that context, I am thrilled to announce the acquisition of TCA, a leader in the RIA custody space, which will enable E-Trade to tap into a growing segment of our industry while bolstering our ability to retain customers and assets in need of higher touch services. And as you'll recall, this is one of the areas we've been evaluating through an inorganic lens for some time. Particularly within our corporate services channel, where many participant executives leverage our stock plan administration services, but seek financial planning and wealth management elsewhere, we want to expand our ability to serve their needs within E-Trade by incorporating a custody platform and addressing the advisor services space through select independent advisors on the TCA platform. We dramatically expand the opportunities to capture this wealth. Additionally, we believe the extension of the E-Trade brand will provide this team with ample opportunities to showcase their superior platform to more advisors. Their technology is truly a standout in the space, with an open architecture framework that interacts seamlessly with top platforms for account aggregation, risk profiling, compliance, and CRM. They offer full mobile accessibility for advisors and end clients, robust customization tools that enable advisors to develop personalized, branded applications for their clients, and they package all functionality in one easy-to-use platform. Further, from our interactions with TCA, it's abundantly clear that we are cut from the same cloth. The company has innovation in its DNA and an exciting culture that closely aligns with ours. We fully intend to continue to foster this spirit under their existing structure, with their CEO as the head of the unit within the E-Trade family. Mike will cover the financial considerations and how we intend to fund the deal, which we expect to close during the second quarter of next year. Now, back to our results. Since I took the helm over a year ago, I've outlined and reiterated three core initiatives, which we have been tirelessly focused on to fuel our growth and meet our goals. First is the Options House integration. Second, our marketing. And third, improving the customer experience. So allow me to walk through where we stand on each one. With regard to the integration, following a year's worth of mapping, planning, and hard work, we completed the customer conversion during the first week of August. With all of our customers now within one ecosystem and the back and middle office connections forged, we are focused on the more exhilarating task of delivering a top-notch experience that caters to derivatives traders, long-term investors, and novice consumers alike. I'm grateful to say that we are placing a check mark on our to-do list by the word integration. There is still much work to do to deliver a unified product offering that showcases the best of all we have to offer, but it will happen as one company. As it relates to our re-engineered active trader chops, when taken as part of our new active trader offering, upon which I will elaborate shortly, we believe we are well poised to welcome more of this attractive segment to E-Trade while introducing the power of derivatives to more Main Street investors. And on that note, following the June launch of our brand campaign, we've been exceptionally pleased with the response to the work we have deployed, which is reflected in our brand health, advertising effectiveness scores, and most importantly, in our business results, where we have truly benefited from the improved awareness. At E-Trade, we're known for our advertising. And while we enjoy this reputation, we believe it is equally important to understand that our marketing does not begin and end with our ads. Marketing, particularly how we approach it, is far more. It's how we address our customers and prospects at every touch point, from the positioning on our public site, to how our offerings are presented across our platforms, to the messaging leveraged by our customer service reps, to the way our entire set of products and services is packaged together into an overall value proposition. And in that spirit, we're gearing up to complement the brand campaign with the launch of a consolidated offering and value proposition for our active trader segment called Power E-Trade. This package delivers a 1-2-3 punch of a best-in-class trading platform backed by support from trading specialists and offered with exceptional pricing. Qualification for this program is 30 trades per quarter and leverages our lower pricing tier of 495 equity trades, 50-cent option contracts, and $1.50 futures contracts. At these prices, when coupled with exceptional guidance from a dedicated services team and a killer trading platform, we believe we can grow our market share among active traders and win in this space. The work supporting this program is strong, and I look forward to its launch in the weeks to come. To complement this highly functional, product-centric work, we'll also shortly roll out phase two of our brand-level campaign, Don't Get Mad, Get E-Trade. Our messaging will continue to evolve, further unpacking our value proposition and ensuring that E-Trade reclaims its mantle as the undisputed home for active traders. After all, we are the original place to invest online. Stay tuned because it's going to be a fun ride. In reflecting on all that we've accomplished in such a short period of time, I can confidently say that we have addressed the need to improve our marketing. We are moving steadily in the right direction with bold, distinctive marketing that places us back on the map. Our charge was to recapture our brand and speak to our customers more directly and forcefully than ever before. I firmly believe we're doing just that. So let's again pull out our E-Trade to-do list and etch a big fat check mark next to this second key area of focus. Our third and final key area of focus is our commitment to improve the customer experience. Frankly, this work will never be complete, so I won't give this one a check mark, but simply say I could not be prouder of the team's work in this important area. This past quarter, we delivered a host of enhancements from the exciting to the mundane, but all focused on serving our customers better. So for a few of the highlights from this quarter, we launched a securities-based lending product, delivering another avenue for customers to utilize their portfolios and E-Trade to achieve their financial goals. We made enhancements throughout our investing offerings, launching a new managed account dashboard and refreshing our managed account pages, making them easier, more intuitive, and more useful. It's evident that we are fostering real growth against our $6 billion managed asset goal through the enhancements we're making here. And lastly, we took some initial steps in our concerted push into futures trading, releasing capabilities across some of our platforms. There will be much more to share on this front over the next two quarters as we expand the availability of futures across our platforms and meaningfully enhance the experience from where it stands today. We were also pleased to be showcased during Apple's announcement of the new iPhone X and look forward to incorporating their technology to make a seamless and secure experience for our customers. As for the housekeeping enhancements we made, which, while certainly less adorned than our shinier initiatives, are no less important, we transformed our document upload process. This sounds a bit boring, but it's actually a top driver of customer feedback. Enhancing this process has removed one of our key customer dissatisfiers. We also improved our online application process to more seamlessly verify customer information while expanding the information and functionality for IRAs. Translation, we're making it easier to become an E-Trade customer, and that's certainly a good thing. As for our metrics, our customers remained highly engaged with the markets this past quarter, generating DARTs of 206,000, down just slightly from last quarter's record levels, but still on pace for our strongest year ever in trading. Our mix of derivatives trades also held strong at 32% for the quarter. One important element within our customer trading is the price point at which it is taking place and why. When we initially struck the bifurcated pricing schedule defined by our 695 standard rate and our 495 active trader tier, we reasoned that by lowering the qualification threshold from 150 to just 30 trades a quarter for the discounted offering, we could assist less active customers in engaging a little more meaningfully to realize a better value proposition. This has indeed proven to be the case, and we have noted an increase in trading by customers to meet the qualification for lower pricing. While this migration was a large driver behind the dilution of commission per trade, this is a trend we can certainly live with, as we're capturing more volume from our existing customers and our value is clearly resonating. We're excited to see what more we can accomplish as our Power E-Trade campaign takes flight. To continue, we ended Q3 with customer margin balances at a record $8.5 billion. Net new brokerage assets of $2.2 billion brought our year-to-date growth rate to a healthy 4.4%, a full 100 basis points higher than the same period last year, and well on our way to reaching our targeted rate. Managed assets ended the quarter at $4.9 billion, an increase of 32% from last year, more than double the growth of the equity markets. We added 26,000 net new brokerage accounts for our strongest Q3 ever, bringing us to 126,000 year-to-date, which is more than 60% higher than the same period last year and reflects a year-to-date growth rate of 4.8% within our targeted range. In terms of October activity, through yesterday, DARTs for the month were trending at around 206,000, flat with Q3 levels, and customer margin balances had come in slightly to around $8.3 billion. As I discussed last quarter, our corporate services channel continues to be a strategically important driver of retail brokerage accounts, assets, and cash. And by adding new business to this pipeline, we essentially increase our metabolism from within. And we amplified our focus on growing new business as the market is presenting a significant opportunity for a leading offering like ours to win share. Our third quarter proved fruitful in this reinvigorated pursuit. For the sixth year in a row, our equity compensation administration platform, Equity Edge Online, was rated number one in overall satisfaction and loyalty by Group 5. This year, we were also rated highest in overall satisfaction for brokerage services. These are welcome accolades and serve as a testament to how tirelessly we work to arm our clients with forward-thinking technology and support. We also made a splash in the wake of some turbulence in competitor offerings and were able to win some serious business. As noted, landing 22 new participant companies representing $8 billion in stock plan assets across more than 110,000 new participants. This is in addition to the $4 billion in new stock plan assets implemented year to date, which is a 60% increase from the same period last year and represents 20,000 new participants now enjoying our service. Let's keep in mind, though, that this is a very long lead business, with many implementations taking a year or more to complete. For those in our current implementation pipeline, we expect to have them on our platform within the next 6 quarters. Further, all indications point to more interest and more agreements on the horizon, and I look forward to sharing more as these come to fruition. We're very encouraged by these trends and are intensely focused on building out a fulsome offering that caters to the specific needs of high net worth investors who come to us through corporate services. We're approaching this challenge from several angles. In addition to the acquisition we announced today, we're also exploring other ways to serve these participants, including the rollout of a tailored cash product, as well as the securities-based lending offering I mentioned earlier, which will provide another tool for participants to capitalize on the value of their stock plans. We are also piloting a referral program with a prestigious private bank to offer services to the senior executives of our participant companies. Now, before Mike takes you through our results and capital, I wanted to touch on some promotions within our management ranks during the quarter, as we welcome two internal stars to the executive leadership team, appointing Leah Stendel as CMO and Lance Brownstein as CIO. Leah is an E-Trade veteran and marketing maven with a heavy hand in some of E-Trade's most successful and memorable campaigns throughout our history. She recently returned home following a 3-year stint with the competition, and on the heels of a phenomenally successful brand launch and a reinvigorated marketing department, we have elevated her title to match the scope of her responsibilities. As for Lance, in addition to adding a brokerage industry leader in Mike Curcio and best-in-class derivative trading capabilities, one of the things that excited us most about Options House was their approach to tech dev under Lance's leadership, specifically in their delivery of cutting-edge trading technology and user experiences on much leaner resources. Lance has been running our tech dev since we closed the acquisition, and his fresh perspective has pushed us to work faster and smarter, reigniting our innovative spirit. To further stoke these fires, I have placed all of our technology efforts under Lance, and I move the role to report directly to me to ensure our delivery receives all the attention it needs. We are, after all, a tech company. Bottom line, as I wrap up these opening remarks, it was yet another blockbuster quarter. We are in a period of the company's history where home runs are frequent and high performance is business as usual. Frankly, this makes my job a heck of a lot of fun, and I'm excited by what more we will be able to share with you along the way in continuing to deliver value for our customers and for our shareholders. With that, I'll turn it over to our CFO, Mike Pizzi.
Thanks, Carl. For the quarter, we posted net income of $147 million, or 49 cents per share, which includes a handful of notable items that had the net impact of reducing results by 6 cents. Overall, it was another quarter of solid results across the board as our business maintained strong momentum in trading volume and margin balances. We onboarded deposits to grow the balance sheet closer to our year-end target, benefited from the full quarter impact of the June Fed hike, and maintained prudent control over expenses. As for the notable items, first, we recorded a $58 million loss related to the early extinguishment of debt associated with the refinancing in mid-August, when we issued $1 billion of 5- and 10-year senior notes at a weighted average coupon of 3.3%, replacing an equivalent amount at a 5% average rate. This reduces our annual interest expense by approximately $17 million. Second, we recorded approximately $11 million in costs related to the Options House integration, as well as the regulatory build-out related to crossing the $50 billion threshold. As Carl mentioned, this quarter marked the final step of the Options House integration, and this will be the last time we discuss costs associated with that deal. Partially offsetting these negative items was a $29 million benefit to provision for loan losses. The portfolio outperformed our assumptions, and we had net recoveries during the period, which together drove the provision benefit. The allowance for loan losses ended the quarter at $94 million. And finally, our effective tax rate for the quarter included an $8 million income tax benefit to the revaluation of our net deferred tax assets. This revaluation typically occurs during the third quarter, and excluding this benefit, our rate was closer to 38%. We expect a full year 2017 tax rate of approximately 37% and a full year 2018 tax rate in the mid-38% range. We expect to see quarterly volatility in our tax rate going forward due to these revaluations and the impact of share-based compensation awards. Now let's move on to the core results. Net revenue of $599 million was up $22 million from the prior quarter, primarily driven by an increase of $35 million in net interest income as we grew average interest earning assets by $2.9 billion, and net interest margin expanded 11 basis points to 285. This was better than our forecast as we refinanced our corporate debt, were opportunistic in our timing of securities purchases, grew customer margin balances to record levels, and securities lending came in strong. For the fourth quarter, we are assuming net interest margin in the low to mid 280s, assuming margin balances remain at their current levels, and we reinvest in securities in the 240 to 260 basis point range, consistent with current market levels. Commissions of $100 million declined $5 million from the second quarter. While overall DARTs moderated slightly, average commission per trade declined by 26 cents to $7.76 on the dynamics Carl discussed earlier of higher pricing tier customers qualifying for our lower pricing tier, as well as lower overall stock plan trades in the period, which is consistent with seasonal trends. Including these variables and assuming the successful adoption of futures trading over the course of the next few quarters, we expect CPT will decline additionally from today's levels to the low 760s going forward on average. Fees and service charges declined by $6 million, largely attributable to the shift of third-party cash to our balance sheet. One housekeeping note, we are now providing the detailed breakdown of this line item in the press release, in addition to the 10-Q, where it has been included for some time. So go ahead and add that to your list of enhancements to the analyst experience. We're here to please. Excluding the charge for the early extinguishment of debt, non-interest expense was $347 million in the quarter, placing our adjusted operating margin at 42%, which excludes the provision benefit but includes the $11 million in costs related to the Options House integration and crossing the $50 billion threshold. This marks the final installment of the Options House implementation costs, and we expect $50 billion related costs to be around $3 million next quarter and $10 million over the course of 2018. Given the relative size of these remaining costs, we do not plan to continue breaking them out. With respect to full-year adjusted operating margin, we previously guided towards 39%, including an expectation for Q3 to be in line with the second quarter level of around 38%. While we grew the balance sheet as planned, customer margin growth and overall NIM outperformed, and customer volumes came in strong. Additionally, we shifted some planned investments to Q4 and added to our marketing spend to coincide with the launch of Power E-Trade. For Q4, we are expecting our adjusted operating margin to be 40%, which includes total marketing expense in the $45 to $50 million range. I will cover our views on next year's adjusted operating margin in my closing remarks. With respect to capital, we repurchased 187 million or 4.6 million shares at an average price of $40.64, on track to complete the $1 billion program by the end of 2018. On balance sheet growth, we continue to plan to end the year at $63 billion. Given current off-balance sheet deposits of around $7 billion, with more than $3 billion available to be onboarded, we have the ability to grow to around $64 billion if we were to deploy all available deposits today. Beyond 2017, we assume that our balance sheet will scale in line with customer deposits. As for corporate cash, we ended the quarter at $309 million, down $160 million sequentially, driven by our repurchase activity and the debt refi. This was offset by a $100 million distribution during the quarter to the parent from the broker-dealer. For Q4, we expect this distribution to be $125 million. With respect to the acquisition of TCA, for the full year 2018, we expect the deal to be neutral to our bottom-line results. Inclusive of the cost of the preferred stock we plan to issue to fund the transaction. For 2019, we expect 2 cents of earnings accretion with an IRR of approximately 20%. This assumes only modest expense synergies as TCA will continue to operate as a standalone platform. Additionally, we expect an acceleration of their growth in their assets under custody, driven by the extension of our brand against the platform and capabilities. When full synergies are achieved in 2019, we expect TCA to contribute approximately $80 million in revenue and be slightly accretive to our overall operating margins. Finally, while it should go without saying, this acquisition does not alter our share repurchase program and doesn't have any bearing on our short-term growth targets, but it unlocks the potential for significant long-term growth. Now turning to expenses and our outlook for next year. As we enter the final stages of our budgeting process, we have developed an informed view of our outlook for 2018 and are targeting an adjusted operating margin for the full year of 42%. This assumes no increase in the Fed benchmark rate from current levels, includes the impact of the TCA acquisition, and incorporates our plans to increase investments in the business over the course of the year, including a ramp up in marketing spend and other areas we believe will enhance our growth. If the Fed were to raise rates in December, as is widely anticipated, we believe we can achieve a 43% op margin for next year. Hitting these targets will not be easy and will require discipline on how we manage the business and our investments, but we are steadfast in our approach to deliver on these goals. And with that, operator, we'll open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. And our first question is from the line of Rich Repetto from Sandler O'Neill. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Carl. Good evening, Mike, and congrats on the TCA acquisition. I guess the question, Mike, if I heard you properly, that in 2018 you're expecting $80 million in revenue from TCA. It looks like the last 12-month run rate was 50, so I'm just trying to understand how you are my numbers correct. A little background on the synergies, if I am correct, and then what are the margins right now at TCA?
Yeah, on the fully synergized, so it's 2019 is the year for the $80 million in revenue. Next year is only going to be a half year on the close. We expect margins to build in line. We think it's in the operating margin guidance we gave for next year, 42%. Based on a Q2 close, we think when fully synergized, it'll be modestly accretive to our overall operating margin.
Okay. And then my one follow-up, Carl, we talked a lot about the average commission and the movement of people down to the lower rate. And I'm just trying to understand, did you find it accretive that the trades made up for the lower commission in this quarter, or is this something that will happen going forward, you expect?
Well, Rich, we've been seeing the effect since the pricing change. Now, is it existing customers feeling they add a few more trades to the mix, or is it a customer who's trading at multiple different accounts across companies that's pushing more to us? It's accretive. It's a positive impact. Our customers are engaging more with us and doing more and giving us more activity. So overall, we think it's a great outcome.
Yeah, and the big thing for me, Rich, when I look at this, and Mike's exactly right, we're just about to roll our Power E-Trade campaign, and what this demonstrates for us and gives us some early anecdotal evidence is that the value prop that we're putting out there is the right one. There are people interested in engaging with their finances through us in derivatives, particularly at this price point, with the service team that we have available to them on our platform. So it's early good results in my view.
And our next question comes from the line of Steven Chubak with Nomura Instinet. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, guys.
Steven.
So I wanted to start off with a question on payment for order flow. It's certainly a topic that's been garnering a lot of focus since the October Treasury report. And a lot of investors seem to be going through this exercise of order flow game theory, so trying to anticipate how you might respond if a large competitor chose to potentially rebate order flow fees back to their clients. And I was hoping you can give us some insight into whether you view this type of response as analogous to what we saw in February with the commission price cuts, which ultimately prompted you and some of your peers to respond with similar actions, or are the considerations around order flow a bit different in your view?
Yeah, so look, Stephen, and people have talked about order flow and payment for order flow and routing and how market structure fits in and what are we going to do in this space, and there must be a change, and there's money here, there's money there. The way I look at it, our investors and the folks who invest with us and the folks who interact with our transactions have never received better execution quality than they're receiving right now, both in terms of speed, in terms of what they get back when we do price improvement for them. It's a very strong dynamic right now. So looking at payment for order flow in a bucket where, should you rebate it or should you do these different things, in my view, you'd be, in this parlance, you'd be, mill wise and pound foolish to take away some of the payment that comes into us. A lot of what we do with that and a lot of what we look at are further improvements to our site, further improvements into the trading experience. So that's one of the things that allows us to continue at the price points that we do and drive the kind of value prop that we do for our folks who interact with us, for our customers. So I don't see this as the same thing in terms of price pressure, price competition. Obviously, we've said this before and we'll stand by it again. We'll do whatever it takes to defend our book. So if anything like this were to go on or there were to be changes that take place, we'd evaluate them in the same vein and take a look at how they're going to impact our customers. Is it going to cause, people to go and move elsewhere? I strongly doubt it, right? We still haven't seen the dislocation from the price cuts, and those were a hell of a lot bigger deal than something like this. So I don't see it coming that way, but we'll obviously continue to evaluate it. But the way I look at it, the value proposition that we have right now is unlike any that we've seen in the history of trading.
Got it. And maybe a question, Mike, for you on deposit beta. Your deposit costs have stayed remarkably low despite some recent increases that we've seen at some of your retail brokerage peers. As we think about the deposit price competition from here, do you feel any pressure to potentially stay competitive with some of the large e-brokers, or because they have a much larger RIA operation, even after this latest deal, where deposit beta should in theory be higher, is it reasonable to expect that you will continue to lag the peer set with future hikes?
We've always thought of our deposits as rate insensitive. We model them that way, and it shows as evidence in the beta. And I would say that in this hiking cycle from the Fed that we've been going through, they're even more insensitive than we modeled. Yes, it's a concern for some customers, and we do look at the competitive environment. We look at the set of products that we offer across various sweep products and other cash management alternatives, and really factor it into our assessment. But overall, by and large, we're not seeing a large need to move deposit rates at this time.
And our next question comes from the line of Devin Ryan with JMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Good evening, guys. Maybe a follow-up here on TCA and just kind of the thought process. Obviously, it's a scale business. You know, some of the large custodians have hundreds of billions of assets, some over a trillion. And I know you understand that it's a scale business. So I'm just trying to think about when you're looking to purchase this business, you know, how it's really differentiated. And when you look at, you know, the technology that you referenced, you know, is there overlap with what's being offered at some of the other custodians, or do you feel like, you know, that there's a big point of differentiation there?
I feel like some of the usability on their platform and the way that it's rolled out to their, you know, the customer set, both on the RIA themselves and then to the end user, and the availability on mobile and the way that it, you know, they can interact and plug in the open architecture. I think they do have a differentiated offering. You know, well aware that this is a scale business. When we look at, you know, TCA, we see a couple different things, right? One is obviously the ability to diversify our revenue streams and bring additional into us through a channel that we haven't played in. It is a custody, you know, platform for us. The second thing is putting our marketing and branding behind this to help them grow and go out and garner additional assets. But one of the most important things that we look at and we talked about strategically, both at the board, you know, the management team first and then with the board, was giving us additional tools and an additional avenue to really go out and work on our stock plan participant base. A lot of the assets that leave us through that channel do indeed go either to, you know, bulge bracket firms or to RIA channel. And it is something that we think we can use to harvest additional share of wallet and continue to keep more of those assets on us. So that's the way we look at it, you know, just holistically as looking at this deal.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful. And just to follow up here, you spoke about some of the competitive dynamics in the corporate stock plan business, which you know, E-Trade has been benefiting from. And I know that some of your competitors are outsourcing onto certain, you know, fintech platforms. I'm assuming that was what you were referring to. But do you have a sense of how long that window will be open, you know, as firms are kind of migrating? And are you having, you know, more conversations around some of that migration where you feel like you can win some contracts away?
Well, I think we're still in early days of the, you know, of the migration and moving on to those, you know, outsourced technology platforms. So we're just starting to see some of the early results. Some of the deals that we announced, actually most of those are not a result of dislocation. They're just a result of the stellar team that we've built, you know, around this and the guys who go out and work with these big corporates every day and satisfy their needs. I mean, Equity Edge Online provides, you know, lots of functionality to these companies, and we've been able to tailor it in a way that is extremely helpful. And when you get into some of the bigger, you know, players in the space, you can grow quite quickly just in terms of being helpful with their HR departments, helpful with their legal departments, and moving from there. So you get a good reputation, which we have a stellar one, and you grow from there. So the dislocation, I believe, is still to come. We're starting to see some initial RFPs. Remember when they changed their stock plan provider, you know, most of these companies will, that's what it's doing when they go to their outsourced technology platform. So we get a shot at that, and, you know, I like our chances in every one of them.
And our next question comes from the line of Connor Fitzgerald with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Connor.
Just on the TC acquisition again, can you just give us a breakdown of the $30 million of revenue synergies you talked about? Is there anything kind of from a revenue uplift per dollar client asset you think you can see versus, you know, some of maybe the growth you'd kind of talked about? And then and on that, just how will the advisor experience at TCA change post this acquisition?
You want to take
the question? Yeah, so I'll take the latter part of the question first, and then I'll turn it back over to Mike. So the experience for the RA will not change at all. This is going to be run as a separate unit for us. Their senior management team, which I'm quite impressed with, will remain in place, and we'll run it together. So there won't be a change to their overall experience. So, Mike, you want to go through the numbers?
Sure. I think if you think about sort of the synergies of a deal like this, you know, first off, you have synergies from just a general corporate type integration. So what I would consider finance functions like I run, the risk function or other areas where we can bring at scale operation to them. That's obviously a very modest amount of cost synergies, but it is a factor in the deal. When you look to the revenue side, we expect our brand and some modest investment in the business should be able to drive additional growth overall. We think it's a capable technology platform that is differentiated in the space and will allow some degree of additional growth. And then really in like a third category, I would say is our relationships with vendors, our relationships with fund companies, asset managers, where we think we can deliver overall better economics to them what they're earning on those relationships. Putting all of those pieces together, you get to the fully synergized revenue. Now, keep in mind, you took the last 12 months from the investor deck and you took the number we gave in the prepared remarks and said that's the synergies. There is a level of baseline organic growth. They have been growing, so it's not entirely correct to call that number the synergies.
That's helpful. Thank you. And then appreciate the expense outlook for 2018. Just in trying to think through some of the moving pieces, you had a really strong expense discipline quarter, I think a 44% core pre-tax margin. When you're thinking about setting the 42% target for next year, can you just give us a sense of how much will be kind of investment in the business versus if, you know, revenues come in better and some of the, you know, strong trends we've seen on trading continue, you know, what that upside scenario could look like?
Well, I mean, I think the key investment that we call out really, and you can see it in the plan really going into Q4 from Q3. Q3 is a period of time where we didn't spend as much on marketing simply because it's a generally quieter time. So we shifted some of that into Q4 of this year. So similarly for next year, with the launch of Power E-Trade, with the now, you know, fully integrated Options House platform, with our investments really in a more capable futures platform and everything that we're doing, correspondingly, we're upping marketing again. That's really one of the key drivers. But we are really looking through and continuing to apply discipline, you know, in other areas of expenses so that overall we can deliver a pretty compelling operating margin of 42% for the year. And that's really without the Federal Reserve any action from the Federal Reserve in December. With the Fed moving 43% and a good market backdrop like we've been having, you know, we think 43% is very achievable.
And our next question comes from the line of Brennan Hawken with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for taking the questions. One quick one on the commission indication. I think you said that you expected to go to the low 760s going forward. But does that include what you expect will be the impact of Power E-Trade, or is that before that?
That includes the impact of the launch of Power E-Trade, additional customers coming on from that in the 495 type level. That's really a forecasted level. And I think also, you know, it's in the remarks, but I'll reiterate it. It also considers a build in our futures trading at $1.50. That does drag on the number as well. But we think that's a very compelling price point to be putting out there in that market.
Terrific. Thank you. And then one more on TCA. When we think about this and your comments with how it fits in with the wealth management opportunity and the tie-in with your corporate stock plan, is that tied to previous comments? I believe you've indicated in the past that you're looking more to target the middle management layers for your corporate stock plan customers, or does the acquisition of TCA lead you to adjust those aspirations at this point?
So I think, look, the way I look at stock plan, and when we talk about this a bit, right now, before we talk about what we're onboarding and how well we've been doing in that space, it's about 1.5 million plan participants who are on us that have an event taking place, whether it be a restricted stock grant, an option, or a performance share unit, or something in their pipeline with us. So we're looking at the entire spectrum. I believe some of the comments we made in the past have been around the C-suite, the senior management folks, and the Section 16 officers. A lot of those folks are tied into some of the bulge bracket relationships that the companies have whether it be through the underwriters in an IPO or other senior members. So that is definitely an echelon that's a bit tougher to crack, and you need to be able to go after that segment with the right tools of the trade. So we talked a little bit about our, you know, initial sort of fledgling relationship that we're developing with, you know, a private bank to go in and offer additional services to that group. And, you know, some of those folks in that tier and the tier down also move off of their own platforms and move out of our platform and go to investment advisors, right? So, and then, you know, and the other folks in terms of education and the folks who would be more in the Main Street population as our customers, it's really about driving them through education and providing the tools and services to let them interact with their finances, you know, seamlessly and very easily, giving them technology that works for them, getting to them early and providing them with opportunities to understand how they can do better with their interacting with their finances. So it's really the entire spectrum. I don't think we're changing anything. What we're trying to do is put as many tools in our arsenal as we possibly can to make sure that we don't lose any of those customers who we could otherwise keep if we had the service that they were looking for, you know, out of that lane. So it's really raising E-Trade's profile with that group of individuals so that they don't just look at us as a service provider, but more as their stop when they want to deal with their finances.
And our next question comes from the line of Dan Fannon with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Another question on TCA. I guess could you give us a sense of what the growth has been organically over the last couple of years, and then also if you could be more specific about kind of the growth assumptions you're kind of making, as well as what market assumption you're making as you think about the growth, the 2019 revenue target?
Sure. I mean, when we think about sort of the level of growth, we think that, you know, picking up a couple percentage points just from making some modest investment and backing the platform with our brand is readily achievable. You know, historically, they've grown to about $17 billion in assets under custody. They're about 180 total advisors. Again, a very capable platform, you know, growing in the high single-digit range.
And your assumption for the market over the next year and a half, 2 years?
We think that, you know, I think that's a consistent market environment to the one we've been in.
And our next question comes from the line of Chris Harris with Wells Fargo. Please go.
Thanks, guys. On Power E-Trade, it sounds like you're confident that you're going to be picking up share there. So wondering if you guys could comment on, you know, what capabilities you think Power Trade has or does a better job with than the competition.
Look, I have to look back at, you know, where Options House sort of came from and the growth that they were able to experience offering best-in-class platform out to their customers. Putting our brand behind that, rolling out those tools and functionality out to a broader base, including our existing E-Trade population, as well as those who are underserved in this marketplace, we're extremely confident about, you know, the brand, about the service platform that we'll go out with, and also about our active trader sales team that is dedicated to this group and to this platform. So we very much like the market opportunity this brings to us.
Okay, great. The other question I had was on your NIM and specifically the securities portfolio yield. We've been pleasantly surprised at how well that yield has hung in over the years. And if we look at it now, though, it still has a weighted average yield higher than the 10-year Treasury rate. And so just not sure how that's possible, given that I thought your portfolio duration would be much lower than that. So if you guys could maybe talk to us a bit about, you know, that dynamic and how it's been so stable.
Yeah, well, sure. Primarily, we buy agency products. So we're buying We're buying agency mortgage product, typically, you know, in that sort of belly of the curve. I think if you look at sort of the type of yield that offers, and that's on sort of a duration match basis to our deposit liability, that has allowed us really to invest in the type of marginal investment ranges over the course of this year. You know, this right now in the market, we think the right investment rate is going to be right around the mid twos. And you can compare that to kind of where our overall asset yields are. And that's those yields are readily available on a variety of type of products that we invest in.
And our next question comes from the line of Michael Carrier with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just one more on TCA. On the revenues, just wanted to get any, you know, color on, I guess, like the revenue mix in terms of, you know, when you think about commissions versus fees, cash, and obviously if you can grow that business, you know, just over time, you know, how that would, you know, maybe either diversify, you know, your earnings stream.
Well, right now they come to us with about, you know, $1.1 billion or so of customer cash. That is going to be, you know, directly in the indoor sweep program on the close date. So that does give us overall available cash. Now, because these are advisor relationships, they hold less cash on average per account than what we have in our sort of retail brokerage accounts. But it's gonna scale really as they grow assets over time in terms of the amount of cash that they provide. They have some other ancillary revenues, but the rest of it comes from the fees they charge on the assets under custody.
Okay, thanks. And then second, just if as we get into 18, Mike, if we end up getting, you know, further Fed hikes in addition to, say, one in December, how would that impact, you know, either the margin outlook or maybe the incremental investment spend? Like, will most of that, you know, be coming to the bottom line, or, you know, are there, you know, investments on the, you know, on the horizon or on the backlog that if you do get, you know, more in terms of rate, you know, benefits, you know, that you would, you know, spend more, accelerate, you know, some of the growth initiatives?
So look, the way we look at this, if we get more rate hikes or there's additional revenue available, we'll obviously drop as much as we can to the bottom line. But obviously, the you know, sort of all boats rise in the rising tide. So to the extent that we see additional competition, which I would greatly expect, you would see us investing more in our marketing dollars. You may see us investing more in the platform and technology. We've been, you know, pretty clear in terms of the long-term earnings slide that we put out there and where we'd be and how we'd handle this. We are a little bit conservative in those estimates, which I freely acknowledge. But I think, you know, there are a lot of things that we will need to be doing to keep up in a competitive landscape like that in a rising rate environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the long-term earnings slide does a great job. You know, if you think about a 100 basis point parallel shift and what could be achievable from that, you know, we have it at a 46% operating margin. You know, that roughly implies almost an 80%, you know, sort of flow through on the marginal economics of increases in rates. I guess what I would sort of, you know, the only thing I would put out there is sort of deposit betas, which we've already sort of talked about on the call. But we think that, you know, that those assumptions in that slide do assume that we move our deposit rates with markets. So, you know, to the extent you think there's going to be outperformance, there could be, or there's a catch-up, there may be. But we think that operating margin expansion is very possible, you know, not possible, but highly likely with continued interest rate hikes overall and still allowing some of that to be reinvested into the business.
And our next question comes from the line of Kyle Voigt with KBW. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Just one follow-up on the strategy with TCA. You already noted earlier that the RIA space is, the custody space is a scale business. Just wondering, as we get into 2018 and this deal closes, just trying to understand if you continue to look for other small bolt-on type deals in order to gain scale in that space.
So the way that we've talked about our, you know, inorganic, you know, strategy is we'll continue to look through the same lens that we've looked through for the use of our capital, right? What makes the most sense? Is it buying back? Is it moving more onto our balance sheet and maximizing that and monetizing the cash that's available to us? So that remains the same. The areas that we're interested in obviously remain the same. If there's a scale play, that would be available on the brokerage side. We definitely look to, you know, to take a look at that opportunity. If there was something in the corporate services side, which is a business very important to us to help us grow scale, you know, in that space. And then as we look at, you know, TCA, if we get the acquisition done in the middle of 2018, we'll look at where it is from a strategic perspective, but we'll continue to be the same stewards of capital that we've been, you know, during the past, you know, number of years now.
Okay. And then just a follow-up, just really on the additional preferred issuance. Guess I'm just wondering if you could give an update on your desired capital structure, really just, I guess, between preferred and common. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we look at the overall sort of the amount of preferred we have at $400 million today, the size of this acquisition at $275 million, and the current state of the preferred markets from a cost perspective, you know, which we think, you know, if you just look at the existing one that we have, would probably put an issuance somewhere in the low 5% range. I think, you know, when you put all that backdrop together, it's pretty compelling. But then from a capital structure standpoint, I think, you know, we start to limit out as we approach sort of 20% or so of overall capital. This will move us up into the mid-teens. We think it's the perfect vehicle for this acquisition. But it, you know, at some point it becomes limited, but it has a very positive effect in the overall capital structure at these type of levels.
And our next question comes from the line of Jeremy Campbell with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, just wanted to follow up quickly on that last point. You know, if you guys look ahead to next year post kind of TCA closure and doing more bolt-ons, you know, again, how do we, if you're going to kind of start plateauing out on the preferred side, how do you think about kind of capital usage in that scenario? Are you going to tap the debt markets? Is there common issuance? What kind of mix would that be in the bolt-ons on a go-forward?
Well, I think if you reach a point where you have, you know, essentially reached capacity from a capital perspective in terms of what you want from a capital structure and preferreds, I think then, you know, obviously we're generating a pretty considerable amount of free cash. We could have deployed that cash to this acquisition. We still would have had a pretty compelling overall return on invested capital if we did so. So that becomes the metric. Provide, you know, that's sort of the discipline we look at, you know, through every acquisition in terms of the use of capital. Is it a compelling return on that capital, you know, versus an alternative use of share buybacks? So, you know, from a longer run perspective, we can continue to look at bolt-ons, you know, largely sort of supported by the cash flow that we're generating.
Got it. And then, you know, it seems like a lot of your initiatives are going well, and the TCA deal makes sense from a big picture kind of strategy sense with getting the RIA exposure. And I know you guys kind of, you know, you run the business with the expectation you'll stay independent going forward, and the deal isn't that big. But I'm just wondering, does this deal at all kind of reduce the board's optionality and perhaps kind of preclude strategic alternatives like exploring a sale?
So what I would say is I can't speak for the entire board as they have, you know, fiduciary duties that align with this whole routine. But what I would say is it doesn't. This deal is going to be run as a, you know, sort of separate standalone business. We will make sure that it is enveloped within our enterprise risk management structure, which we are extremely proud of and we've built out quite well. So that will be, you know, sort of the touch points into E-Trade itself, and we'll put the brand behind it, but it will be run as relatively standalone. I do not believe that this transaction inhibits in any way the board's ability to do whatever they think is right as they exercise their, you know, view of our strategic future. We laid out growth goals. We've been reporting on those growth goals religiously to you all and to, you know, to everybody else coming out. We post them internally. We've used them as a mechanism to really align the organization from top to bottom and drive results and make sure that we are, you know, at an execution/accountable culture to goals that we've set out to show both the board and the street and our investors and everybody else who's interested in us that we can continue to grow organically. So, you know, don't misinterpret. This acquisition we think is strategically very good, but we will continue to track to our growth goals, which we fully expect to meet. But it's not going to, first of all, detract or distract this management team from what we've set out and have been very clear-cut as the most important things to us. and that is being the number one digital broker, you know, in the space to investors and advisors alike, right? Known for ease of use and our, you know, and our functionality. So it's it is what we've laid out, and I don't believe that this in any way changes anything that we've set forth.
And our final question comes from the line of Michael Cyprys with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I just wanted to circle back to the stock plan business. You mentioned some new wins there. So just curious your perspective on what are some of the aspects of your value proposition that you think are most resonating with those clients driving to these new wins here that you spoke about? And as you look out into 2018, what are some of the objectives and kind of growth priorities that you have in the stock plan business?
Sure. Look, it's a great question. I love talking about this business, so thank you. It starts with a team that is focused on providing excellent service and a platform that works for the team that has to administer the plan within the organization. Right, it's not just looked at as a plug-and-play or a piece of software that you go out and sell to these folks and have them come on it and try to adapt to it. They actually build and learn, right? When we talked about the Options House acquisition, we talked a lot about, you know, it's going back a ways, but you know, the first conference I did back way in September of 2016 was sort of working through what they bring to us in terms of Agile. This is one of the businesses that we had run as an agile format from the entire time. So our tech guys, right, our customer service guys, our product guys, the sales folks, the installation teams, they all work with the customer or the prospect to make sure they understand what they want and they build it out for them, right? We are very user-friendly in this space. It has to be a high-touch space because there are human beings on the other end dealing with real-life problems. So it really starts with that. It's a focus on the business. It's a focus on, you know, what can we do to help serve this corporate to make sure that their HR department, their legal department, has a stress-free existence within Equity Edge Online. Right? That's our job every day. So that's why I talk about wins and what we can do and where we can go with this, because I know the team is on the ground and I know who they're competing with. Right? If you look around in this marketplace, I am quite comfortable that our team can outdo anybody out there, as long as they're given the opportunity and the chance, and we have the bandwidth to take on the customers we're looking at. That's sort of where we are right now. So I like the prospects for this business. I like their opportunities given the dislocation in the marketplace. And if we had another hour, I could keep going.
Okay. And just wanted to lastly follow up on a point you made earlier about making it easier to become an E-Trade customer with some of the improvements. Where do you stand on that today versus where you'd like to be along that spectrum? And maybe you could just talk a little bit about what's left on your to-do list as you look out over the next 12 to 18 months there.
So on our customer dissatisfiers, right, we have a running list of those, and those are generated from, you know, right out of our call centers and right out of the folks who are on the helplines and dealing with customer service on the front line. So it's a constant and evolving list. Some of the things you heard me talk about in the prepared remarks were just something as easy as uploading documents, or, you know, fixing our online application to make sure that it is extremely intuitive and easy to use, right? Helping find information from, you know, for customers, or helping them populate the fields more easily so that their experience with E-Trade from day, you know, minute one is pain-free, right? That's what we strive for. As I said in the prepared remarks, this is not one I can ever give a check mark to. It is a constant work in process. Somebody will always have a better touch point, something nicer out there, a better look and feel. We have teams of people internally working on this every day to make sure our customers get the best from us in every interaction they have with us, from our prospect site all the way through to their first login, to their first, you know, ACH or the money that comes in from whatever source they're going to use, to make sure that that's seamless. That's the way you keep customers, right? You keep them happy from their first interaction with you. So that's what we continue to drive at, and you will see more. And I will never put a check mark on this one because I'll never be satisfied, right? We need to continue to improve every day.
And at this time, we have no further questions in the queue. I will now turn it over to you, Mr. Rosner.
Well, thank you all for joining, and we'll speak with you next quarter, if not sooner.